Ah, hello again, my curious friend. Let me guess, you want to hear about this new entity that has followed Jason and Lucia? And to find out whom can put up a good fight against Amy? Igor, grab our customer that new book.
Yes, master, but the lights aren't working in that section. It's a little dark.
I don't care, Igor. Customers first. Sorry again for his ignorance. Now grab yourself a comfy chair and a beverage, and ready yourself for the next part of this terrifying tale.
News just in. We have police description of possible suspect regarding grave robberies. Suspect is described as being short with long matted hair, wearing a Justin Bieber shirt and heavily soiled trousers.
Are you a fan of Cheetos? What about pies? Berry pies are good, right? And boy, everyone loves a pickle. Come and try our new flavor, Pickleberry Pie Cheetos. Coming to stores near you this Sunday.
Master, what are those noises?
Shut up and grab the book, Igor. That's nothing.
The Immortal Bloodline. In the darkening woods, the air heavy with menace, the five of us huddled closer. The tension among us was palpable. Ella's hand trembled in mine, her eyes wide with fear, and Morgan stood silent. Her gaze darted into the shadows. Jason and Lucia, seasoned cryptid hunters, looked unusually grave. "Who or what followed you here?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. Jason exchanged a look with Lucia before answering.
"It's not just a what, Jacob. It's a who, and he's ancient and powerful."
Lucia's face was ashen as she added, "It's Dracarys, known in myth as Dracula." Ella gasped, stepped closer to me. "Dracula? As in the Dracula? Vampire stories Dracula?" Before anyone could respond, a horrifying screech split the air. We spun around as a massive vampire creature with dark, leathery wings descended before us, landing with a ground-shaking thud. The creature's eyes glowed a fierce red as it screeched again, bearing long, sharp fangs. Lucia, reacting quickly, pulled out a gun and fired several silver bullets straight at the creature. They hit their mark but melted away on impact, as if they were nothing. "Silver doesn't work!" she shouted, her voice edged with panic. Jason, not missing a beat, drew the ancient sword that seemed to pull with its ancient magic. "Stay behind me," he yelled, charging at the vampire with a war cry. But his bravery was short-lived. The vampire swatted him away with a casual flick of its wing, sending him crashing into a nearby tree. As we rushed to Jason's aid, the creature shifted, morphing into a tall, imposing man with piercing eyes and an aura of undeniable power.
"Foolish mortals," he began.
His voice resonated through the forest.
"No weapon forged by man can kill me. I am Dracula, the first of my kind. The eternal darkness, the predator of the night."
As Dracula's chilling declaration echoed, an enormous figure burst through the trees. Tony, Zack and Morgan's father, in his terrifying vampire-werewolf-like hybrid form, lunged at Dracula with a ferocious roar. The impact sent Dracula flying through the air, crashing into the woods with a thunderous noise.
"Zack!"
Morgan cried as her brother disappeared into the shadows, following the monstrous figures.
"Zack, wait!"
I yelled, but he was gone. Moments later, he reappeared, panting. "Dad." He recognized me, and he didn't kill me. Ella clung to my arm, her face buried against my shoulder. "We need to get out of here, Jacob. We have to survive this together." Just as we turned to flee, a figure dressed in all black emerged from the dense forest. His presence commanded immediate attention, his long black leather coat billowing slightly with his measured steps. He stopped a few feet away, his cold eyes assessing us.
"Leave now," he commanded in a low, authoritative voice. "And hand over the sword, Jason."
Jason struggled to his feet, clutched his sword defiantly.
"Who are you to demand anything from us?"
In a blur of movement, The mysterious man was upon Jason, disarming him with a series of precise, fluid motions that spoke of extensive training. Holding the sword aloft, he declared, "My name is Ezekiel. I am here to end the bloodline." Before we could process his words, an earth-shattering roar erupted from the forest. Dracula, now reverted to his monstrous form, was battling Tony in a clash of supernatural titans. Ezekiel stood before us, his presence commanding his attention. His eyes held the weight of centuries, a depth of knowledge and experience that spoke volumes without a word spoken. "You may be wondering who I am and why I'm here," Ezekiel began, his voice steady and grave. "I am a descendant of the original vampire hunters, tasked with protecting humanity from the darkness that Dracula embodies." He went on to explain how his ancestors had discovered Dracula's existence thousands of years ago and had dedicated their lives to eradicating his influence from the world. Generation after generation, they had passed down their knowledge, their skills, and their sacred duty to future hunters like Ezekiel. "As the last of my line," Ezekiel continued, his gaze sweeping over us, "I stand here today to fulfill the oath sworn by my forebears, to rid the world of the curse that Dracula has wrought upon humanity." His words hung heavy in the air, the weight of his legacy pressing down upon us. We understood now the magnitude of what we faced, the significance of the battle taking place, and we knew that Ezekiel was our best hope for ending the darkness that had haunted us for so long. As Ezekiel spoke, a sense of solemnity settled over us, the gravity of his words sinking in. He began to recount the ancient history of Dracula, the first of his kind, the progenitor of a curse that had plagued humanity for millennia. "Dracula is not just a vampire," Ezekiel explained, his voice carrying the weight of centuries of knowledge. "He is the originator of the immortal bloodline, the source from which all monsters and vampires trace their lineage." He went on to describe how thousands of years ago, Dracula had been cursed by dark forces, his thirst for power and immortality leading him to strike a deal that would bind him to eternal darkness. In doing so, he had inadvertently spread his curse to all those he encountered, creating an army of monsters that plagued humanity for centuries. "But there is hope," Ezekiel continued, his voice tinged with determination. "For it is said that if Dracula is killed using that ancient sword of fallen heroes, the curse he had placed upon humanity will be lifted." Ezekiel glanced towards the commotion commencing between Tony in Bloodwolf form and Dracula in his monstrous creature-like form, then back at us. "This ends tonight. Stay or go, but know this. Only one will walk away from this battle." Zack stepped forward, his expression grave yet determined. "There's something I need to tell you," Zack began, his voice low but steady. "Even in that monstrous form, there's still a piece of my father left, alive and breathing, cloaked behind the blood wolf exterior." "He recognized me," Zack continued, his voice trembling with emotion. "In the midst of the chaos, in the heat of battle, he saw me and he didn't attack. There's still a part of him fighting against the curse, struggling to break free." Morgan's eyes widened with hope, a flicker of light in the darkness. "You mean, he's still in there somewhere?" Zack nodded, his resolve strengthening with each passing moment. "Yes, and I won't give up on him. We can't." As we stood there, surrounded by the remnants of the night's battle, a newfound determination filled us. We may have faced unimaginable horrors, but now we have a glimmer of hope to hold on to. A chaos to save not only our own lives, but the soul of a man trapped in the grip of darkness. "Ezekiel, please," Zack pleaded, his eyes pleading with the seasoned hunter. "That wolf, it's not just some monster. It's our father, Tony. He's still in there, fighting against the darkness. Please don't kill him." Morgan's voice trembled as she joined her brother, her hands clasped together in a silent plea. "We know he's still alive. Even in that form, we can feel it. Please give us a chance to save him. We'll do anything to help." Ezekiel regarded them with a mixture of pity and resolve, his expression unreadable. He understood the depth of their desperation, the pain of watching a loved one trapped in the grip of darkness. but he also knew the stakes of their mission, the importance of ending Dracula's curse once and for all. "I understand your pain," Ezekiel said, his voice soft yet unwavering. "But the creature before us is not your father. It is a vessel for darkness. A pawn in a game that spans for centuries. If we are to have any hope of lifting the curse and saving countless lives, the blood wolf must die along with Dracula." Zack and Morgan's shoulders slumped into defeat, tears glistening in their eyes. They knew Ezekiel was right, that their father's salvation depended on the defeat of Dracula. But the thought of losing him, of never having the chance to save him, was almost too much to bear. "Please," Zack whispered, his voice choked with emotion. "We'll do anything. Just give us a chance to save him." Ezekiel's gaze softened, a flicker of empathy crossing his features. He understood the depth of their love, the desperation driving them to make such a plea. And though his duty remained clear, his heart ached for the pain that they were enduring. "Very well," he said, his voice heavy with resignation. "I will give you the chance you seek. But know this, we are running out of time. Dracula's darkness spreads with each passing moment, and if we do not act swiftly and now, all will be lost." With a solemn nod, Zack and Morgan stepped back, their hearts heavy with the weight of their decision. They knew the road ahead would be fraught with danger and uncertainty, but they also knew that they would do whatever it took to save their father, to bring him back from the brink of darkness. And with Ezekiel's reluctant agreement, they had been given a sliver of hope, a chance to reclaim what they had lost. As myself, Ezekiel, Jason, Lucia, Zack and Morgan turned to join the fray, Ella squeezed my hand, her eyes meeting mine with a silent plea. I nodded, understanding. "Let's get out of here, to live our lives together, no matter the darkness." We turned and ran, the sounds of the epic battle fading into the background, hoping against hope that we were running toward a new beginning, not just escaping our end. The forest swallowed us as the night grew darker around us, but ahead there was a hint of light, the promise of dawn yet to come, the future still undecided.
The Greyskins. Here we go again. Yes, you read that right. We. Since you last heard from me, a lot has happened. It's been over 2 years since we last spoke, so let me catch you up. Olivia is safe. I managed to get her out of the forest into a hospital. She spent 3 months in a coma, and when she finally woke up, she couldn't remember anything that happened. I managed to earn enough money in those 3 months to find her a little one-bedroom flat for us to stay in. So once the hospital said Olivia was okay to leave, I took her back and spent countless nights laid awake, staring at the ceiling, wondering, do I tell her? How was it that she could remember me but nothing else? I was even contemplating just leaving one night and letting her have a normal life again. But she is like me, or how I was, a loner. She has no family here, no friends. It wouldn't seem right just to leave her after it was me who made her go into that forest. Fast forward another 6 months and we are now in London. As much as I enjoyed it in the north, after everything that happened up there, I thought it would be best to return closer to what used to be home. I've still been researching what other creatures are out there and have had some smaller battles with less dangerous foes. Goblins, gremlins, etc. On our way back down south, we actually stopped in Nottingham as I seen a lot of new reports about werewolves in Sherwood Forest. I figured I could handle that again and I did. That also helped me start to really come to terms with what happened to Carl and Jess. It was one of the first places we visited, the three of us together, and it just felt like a weight had been lifted. Anyway, back to Olivia. It took a long time for her to stop asking me what happened. The story I gave her. I came home one night in Manchester after a shift at the bar and we had a drink together. Things got a bit messy and we went out to get food and we took one of those silly electric scooters for a spin. And being drunk, she fell off and hit her head. I could tell she didn't believe me though. There was something inside her that knew the truth. Part of me hoped it would stay buried deep down. The last few months, Liv has been working for a delivery food service. It keeps her busy but sadly doesn't keep her mind occupied enough to let it all go. At least once a week, there'll be a not so subtle comment that I'm not telling her everything. So you're probably waiting for me to tell you what creature or monster or whatever you want to call them we're fighting this time. But this is going to be the hardest tale of all to tell. For the last year, Liv has had hospital appointments every 3 months to check how she's doing physically, mentally, etc. They do memory tests every time, which I just sit and hold my breath through. We always see the same doctor who has been really nice and has certainly helped a lot, Dr. Anderson. He always wore the same clothes every time we saw him. Grey pinstripe trousers, brown leather shoes, a white Oxford shirt and a thin black tie. He also had jet black hair and a full beard. A very good looking man. And to look at him, you wouldn't think doctor, but maybe that's just me being too quick to judge. But I was surprised when we first met him. It's Liv's final appointment tomorrow. I'm currently sat going over in my head if I should ask Dr. Anderson, seeing as we won't be seeing him again, if I should tell her the truth as to what actually happened. He knows I haven't told her the truth, but I haven't told him the truth either. I look at the clock as it ticks over to 2 a.m. and the thought, appointment at 10 a.m, I'll be okay to drive if I have a sly rum and coke now, surely, races through my brain. I poured a drink and collapsed on the sofa, mind racing, until I eventually passed out. Liv's alarm woke me up at 7:30. She stumbled out of the bedroom, rubbing her eyes, asking why I didn't come to bed. I just told her I couldn't sleep, so I came out here to watch a movie and must have just passed out. She made us both a cup of coffee, we sat at the table and just looked at each other for what felt like forever. So after today, you're finally going to tell me the truth, she asked. Honestly, it's like this girl could read my mind, or maybe I was talking in my sleep. Either way, I rolled my eyes, stood up and walked towards the bedroom. Amy, you know that I know you're lying. These are my memories. I deserve to know what happened to me. She was right in a way. It was her life and she should have all the information. But is it worth the potential damage? Let's just get dressed and go see Dr. Anderson, I said as I walked away. We got dressed and showered in silence. I zipped up my jacket and asked if she was ready to leave. She just nodded and walked past me out the door. I grabbed my keys and let her outside just loud enough for her to hear. Luckily, the hospital was only about a 20-minute drive from the flat, so there wasn't enough time for the tension to build up even more. I pulled into the hospital car park, and as Liv went to open the door and get out, I pulled her back in. Okay, I'll admit it. I haven't been honest with you, but it's for good reason. You have to trust me, I said. I will speak to Dr. Anderson and ask his opinion on if I should tell you or not. And if he says it's okay, then I will tell you. I promise. We walked through the hospital, hand in hand, almost with a smile on our faces. I was hoping that the doctor would just say that everything is perfect, but I shouldn't tell her what happened. We arrived at the neurology department and sat and waited. We never normally waited more than 5 minutes, but today we were sat waiting for a good half an hour. I went up to the reception area twice and asked if it was going to be much longer. There was a lot of staff running about the place, which seemed odd, but the neurology department was right above the A&E, so I just assumed maybe there'd been some sort of terrible car crash or something, so I didn't want to be too pushy. Finally, Dr. Anderson came out and called us into his office. He looked visibly tired, and for the first time ever, his hair wasn't perfect and his beard looked off. His top button was undone, and he didn't talk with his usual calm tone. We did all the usual questions, memory tests, any problems with sleeping, etc. As it was the last appointment, I expected it to last a lot longer than normal, but we were in and out within 15 minutes, almost as if he was trying to rush us out. After we left the office, I told Liv to wait in the reception area whilst I spoke to Dr. Anderson. I came back and knocked on the door, but there was no answer. His office was at the end of a corridor, so he couldn't have gone past us. I slowly pushed the door open. His office, it was empty, but the window was open. I slowly made my way over to the window and stuck my head out. There he was. Dr. Anderson had jumped from his office window. I couldn't believe it. Why? But then I almost felt touched that he saw to us before doing this, a man who seemed to have the perfect life. I took a few deep breaths and composed myself. Again, faced with the choice of should I tell the truth. I walked out of the office making a point of saying, thank you for everything, doctor, loud enough for Liv to hear me. I guess subconsciously my mind was made up. What did he say? Liv grilled me straight away. Let's talk about when we get home. Shall we go to the cafe and get a coffee? I asked her. Just tell me, please, she begged. Look, I promise I will tell you exactly what he said to me when we get home, but I want a coffee and a bacon sandwich first, I said with a stern face. Hopefully the time having a coffee and a sandwich will give me time to come up with something. We headed to the other side of the hospital for the cafe. We've been there on a few of these visits and the coffee is actually pretty good. As we walked the corridors, again more doctors and nurses running past us at full pace. Liv even asked what I thought was going on. I just said maybe a car accident or something. Check on Facebook, you know I like to people post everything on there. We grabbed the table and sat down. Do you want a bacon sandwich as well, I asked. Yes please, and lots of brown sauce, she asked. I stood in the queue waiting and the woman in front of me turned round to say that it was strange seeing all the staff members running around like crazy. I agreed and said we've been regulars here recently and I've never seen anything like this before. My phone pinged in my pocket. It was a text from Liv. That's weird. I'm going to move table. This guy keeps coming over and standing next to me. It's freaking me out. I looked over and saw her moving our coats to a different table and then I saw the guy she was talking about. He must have been mid-30s but his eyes looked like he was in his 80s. His skin was grey and his hair was dishevelled. I gave Liv a little wink as we made eye contact. Finally, I was next in line. Two coffees and two bacon sandwich, please. I turned around and that weird guy had lodged himself at a woman sat with her baby. Liv went running over to help. No, I shouted. I ran over as well, trying to pull the man off this woman. I took an elbow to the face and went flying over one of the tables, smashing cups and plates along the way. I got myself to my feet to see Liv wrestling with the grey-skinned man. From looking so exhausted and lethargic, he seemed to have the energy of 10 men now. I ran over to try and pull him off. Liv screamed as he sunk his teeth into her arm. I saw a fork on the floor. I picked it up and jammed it into one of his eyes. He let out a harrowing scream and started shaking his head. He took off running, head first into a wall and then hit the floor. Everyone started to run. I picked Liv up off the floor and her arm was bleeding. I said we had to go around to the A&E department. I wrapped my coat around her arm to try and slow the bleeding down. We made it to A&E and the place was in chaos. I demanded that someone check Liv's arm for us. And after showing them the bite, a doctor came and saw us straight away. He was wearing a face mask, which I thought was odd. But ever since the good old days of COVID, some people even now still wear them. And I suppose in the hospital it's a bit more understandable. I could see the panic in his eyes. I was confused. The guy was clearly mentally unwell, but it's not like she was bitten by a rabid dog. He stood up and walked backwards, saying there was nothing he could do to help, and took off running. I tried to chase him, but Liv was writhing in pain more than ever. What the hell is going on? I thought to myself. I grabbed another staff member and asked what was happening. They were about to tell me until they saw Liv laid on the hospital bed and again took off running. Amy, help me, Liv screamed. I tried to look for bandages and some antiseptic cream or something that I think might help. As she laid there screaming for help, I could see her eyes start to change. They almost looked sunken into her head. All the colour from her skin had gone and she appeared grey. Now I was starting to panic. She stopped screaming and looked as if she had fallen asleep. I slowly made my way towards her. I put my hand on her arm. It was cold. Liv, I said quietly. Her eyes sprung open and she looked directly at mine. She leaped from the bed towards me. She had gone. This was no longer Olivia. Clearly, this was some sort of virus that was essentially turning people into zombies. Yes, zombies. I ran away from her and hid in a cleaning cupboard trying to come up with a plan. I mean, this sort of stuff is basically my speciality now, I guess. I sat there and I knew it. If it came to it, I would have to kill Olivia. After all these months of work, getting her back to normal for this to happen. There's got to be some sort of irony in that. She gets a brain injury and then turns into something that eats brains. By now, the place was covered in police and fire service as well. I made my way out the cleaning cupboard. I armed myself with a mop. It's literally all I could find. And from what I know, anything zombie related, a strong hit to the head usually does the trick. I tried to make my way back through the hospital to get out. This was too much for me to face on my own. I fought off a few of the greyskins with the help of a few police officers. I found myself back at the neurology department. I couldn't believe it. Dr. Anderson, he stood in front of me. He must have knew what was going to happen to him and tried to prevent it by taking his own life. Again, after seeing to us first. This was going to be difficult. He ran towards me, snarling and screaming, my hands tightening around what was left of this mop. It was just a wooden stick now. I swung with all my force and hit him square in the face. He fell to the ground and I took off again running. I was out the door. I made my way back to the car, fumbling for the keys. I managed to get in the car. I looked in the rearview mirror and you already know what I could see. Olivia. She just stood there. I put the car in reverse and drove back as fast as I could, smashing the car and her against the wall. I hit my head and I was dazed. I looked in the mirror and I could see her face against the rear window and my head was bleeding. I got out of the car and stumbled across the car park. I can't keep doing this for much longer.
What is that smell? You haven't shit yourself. Oh no, Igor, it's just you. I hope these tales continue to strike terror into you.
Master, we must continue our experiment.
Igor, how many times do I have to tell you to shut up? Thank you for returning. We will see you next time. Honestly, I don't know why I put up with you at times. You're going to ruin this whole plan.